Crosby, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th, Part 6, to name a few, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Hey guys, Tyler Mayne here, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hi, I'm John Russo, screenwriter of Night of the Living Dead. Welcome to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not trying to survive a giant alien spider attack, taking shelter at night from nocturnal monstrosities, or trying to survive being locked up with a vampire ballerina, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And I am bringing you a trio of reviews featuring two great creature features and probably the best horror film of the year so far. But before we get started, please make sure to follow me on all social media pages, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe to the YouTube channel by clicking the links in the description below. By doing that, you'll help me continue to talk about all forms of badassery. So let's kick things off with my review of Sting. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. When 12-year-old Charlotte finds a strange spider in her apartment complex, she adopts the arachnid as a pet, but soon it grows to an abnormal size and begins to prey upon the apartment's tenants. I went into this movie not expecting anything special and just wanting to see a good old-fashioned creature feature slash monster movie. And it definitely did that for me. It was everything that I actually wanted it to be. I didn't have huge expectations, but nevertheless, I wanted it to be something that I enjoyed, and I love these types of horror movies. This is like one of my favorite subgenres is the creature feature. I wish we got more of these. Over the last 30 plus years, we've gotten a plethora of these movies, but here recently, maybe in the last 10, the volume of these types of horror films has slowed down, at least as far as major releases goes. The last really good one that I remember getting was Crawl. And I love that movie. I know some people wasn't very high on it, but I love the thought of alligators getting trapped in this building with me while there's a flood going on and my house is flooded and I can't get out and I have two alligators that are trying to get me. That's terrifying to me. I love movies like that that really put you in situations where you had to face this beast or this monster to survive. I just love those types of movies. And Sting is no exception. I think that Sting does a great job of embodying all those things that I love about this subgenre. It starts out with the story, which is very simple and straightforward and effective. We don't need a whole lot of backstory. We just need something that is simple and that can get people engaged right away. And Sting has that. It has this very small event where we're introduced to the spider and then it kicks off from there. I don't want to spoil it for you, so go see the movie to see what that is, but it's kind of fantastical, if that makes any sense. It's not something that would happen in real life, which is fine for these types of movies. Most of the cast is pretty good, with the two standouts being Charlotte, played by Aya Brown, and Ethan, played by Ryan Carr. They play a stepdaughter-stepdad duo that have their own little story arc, and I'll get to that later on in the episode. But they do pretty good, and although with these movies, I don't really buy into some of the stuff that happens, because, let's face it, this kind of shit doesn't happen. Giant spiders don't just pop up out of nowhere. So they don't exist. There's not spiders the size of couches in the world. At least, fuck, I hope not. But some things that happen in here don't make any sense. And the characters that we're introduced to, it doesn't seem like they would be able to handle something like that at their age. One being Charlotte, who is 12 in this movie. But it's still effective, and they're still good at their role. The cinematography in the movie is pretty damn good for the most part as well. There are some great shots. Like, there's these shots in the air vents where when the spider is actually in the air vent perusing around and grabbing its victims. There's background stuff that happens where the focus will be on one of the characters. Meanwhile, the giant spider is on the ceiling or on the wall or scooping down and grabbing somebody. Those shots are freaking great in this movie. This has some pretty good creature effects that does a good job of blending practical effects with a little bit of CGI. I think most of the blood in the movie is CGI, at least what I noticed. The spider itself is a very simple design which is very colorful looking. Like, you can obviously tell that this isn't a normal spider that grew to a giant size. It's definitely different. And it's very effective in being scary. Like, when it comes down out of the ceiling or out of the vent and grabs something or someone, it's pretty damn creepy. And the gore. There is a decent amount of gore in this movie. I really wasn't expecting that, but it's fairly bloody and fairly gross. There's points where the spider webs up its victims. All that shit's gooey and gross, and it's very well done. But there is a couple of things that I didn't care for in the movie, and one of them is I said most of the characters are pretty decent, but there are a couple of characters that were more annoying and over the top than they were funny and entertaining. The one in particular is Jermaine Fowler's character of Frank the Exterminator. He's in here obviously to be like some kind of comic relief, and he just falls flat the entire time. And honestly, he's kind of an asshole. There were also a lot of times where the lighting, and I don't know if it was intentional or if it was the theater that I was in. I want to say that it was intentional. But there was points where the lighting was so damn dark, I couldn't hardly see anything that was going on the screen. And once again, it could have been my theater, but I don't think so. And there's some time that is spent on this subplot, and I was talking about this earlier, that is between Charlotte and her stepdad, Ethan, that to me wasn't really satisfied, and it kind of had this real cliche conclusion that you can see coming a mile away. And that's not the main focus of these movies, but I do like to have a little better writing than that. And I felt like that was kind of this lazy throwaway subplot that they could have made it a whole lot better and could have had more of an emotional impact. Because the one thing this movie doesn't have for me is it doesn't have an emotional impact. And I don't think saying that it lacks heart is the right way to put it, but it definitely doesn't have that gut punch. And I felt like that there was points in the movie where that would have been great to have. But despite all those small gripes, Sting does have all the elements that I like in a classic creature feature, with its cool monster effects, the bloody gore, and a simple yet engaging story. So with all that being said, Sting gets a 3.75 out of 5 and his Grizzly grade guarantee. Go check it out at your local theater today. But now let's move on to Arcadian. In a dystopian future where the night is ruled by strange bloodthirsty creatures, a father does all he can to prepare his sons for anything that could happen. But after the unthinkable happens, it's up to them to survive. I heard about this movie from one of the YouTubers that I subscribe to. I didn't know that it was going to be playing at one of my local theaters until I looked it up, and I'm glad that I went and seen it because I did enjoy it. It's not the greatest movie I've ever seen, obviously, but for its budget, it was pretty effective in what it was trying to do. So the whole story is that some kind of cataclysmic event has happened, and we aren't exactly told what happens, but Nicolas Cage either has two boys with his wife and she tragically dies and he's left alone with them, or he finds two boys and he raises them at their own. It's kind of left ambiguous, at least how I remember. But years later, the world they live in now, they are confined to the daytime, because at night they have to be on the inside because they cannot survive, because there are these monstrous creatures that only come out at night and they kill whatever they get their hands on. Nicolas Cage in this movie is very subdued, and it's kind of odd to see, but he does this great job of playing the level-headed, subdued father that's just trying to prepare his sons for everything that could possibly go wrong if he were to be incapacitated or killed. And his sons, that are played by Maxwell Jenkins and Jaden Martell, they did a great job as well, playing the two boys that just want to have a normal life. Or there's one boy that wants to live this normal life and interact with people outside of their house, and then there's the other who just wants to do exactly what his dad tells him and survive and try to figure out what the source of these creatures are, what their weaknesses is, what are these things. And they often collide with each other on what they should do and how they should live their life. The monsters in this movie are some of the most unique and yet oddly not unique designs that I've ever seen for a monster. It is so freaking hard for me to describe what these monsters look like, because you don't necessarily get a good solid look at them. It's flashes here and there, or they're either blurred shots or they come on the screen so quick and they're off the screen before you can even see them, or they're so distant that you can't really see a full display of what they actually look like. And the best way I can describe it is, and to say this is not going to make any damn sense, and I understand that, and I'm sorry that I can't do a better job of explaining it, but they look like, do you remember the old toy Barrel of Monkeys? And you could take each of these monkeys and you can string them up and down and kind of make like a monkey ladder. They are kind of like that toy, but instead of the monkey being a regular monkey, it's humongous, like a gorilla size, and it has a long neck, and it has this long protruding face, almost like they took a monkey's body and they put a bird's neck and head on it. Kind of like how a turkey vulture is. It's kind of like that with a monkey's body. That makes no damn sense, and I understand it doesn't, but they have these big gaping maws too, and right before they attack, they slam their jaws together repeatedly, almost like cartoonishly freaky. Like, it's like pop, 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 and then they freaking attack you. And as dumb as all that sounds, it's pretty freaking creepy. I can't imagine, like, if I was in this world and this damn monster came up on me and it started doing that, I'd be so fucking confused as to what the hell it was doing that it would kill me. The other thing too that's even more cartoonish is when these monsters arrive in packs. I'm telling you, this is going to sound so freaking stupid, but it actually took me completely off guard because I didn't know what the hell to think about it. There is a scene in the movie where these monsters are attacking this place where everybody, this shelter that everybody's at. And the way that they make their entrance when the kid runs outside to get away from them is they're all doing, like, one does a cartwheel and then they hook like a barrel of monkeys and they're all doing this giant freaking cartwheel. So it's kind of like the Critter Ball in Critters, where they're all interlinked and they're rolling. It's just like that, only it's like they're doing a giant cartwheel together. It's freaky looking. As dumb as it sounds, it's very odd and unsettling to look at. So the monsters are pretty interesting. I know I've seen a lot of people kind of say the monsters look like shit. I don't think they look like shit. They're just weird looking. And if I seen something like this, I'd freaking be terrified. I don't even know what I would do about it because they're so freaking weird looking. So I did like the creature designs and I did like the acting. But the problem that I have with this movie is it's very, very, very similar to A Quiet Place. It's got the same beats. No, you don't have to be quiet like they do in A Quiet Place, but the whole premise is damn near the same. The only big difference is they don't give you enough info in the backstory to actually know what the fuck is going on and really how dire the situation is. I mean, we're told that the world is fucked up and you can't go out at night and it's all over the world and this, that, or the other, but I can't recall any time in a movie where they give you an explanation as to how civilization fell. It really doesn't tell you that. And the only other thing that I can honestly say that I didn't care for was Nicolas Cage is not, it's not spoiling anything, but Nicolas Cage is kind of barely in this movie. And I'm going to leave it at that because I did enjoy his subdued performance in this movie, but we didn't get to see enough of it. Here lately, all we have seen is out of control, off the hinges Cage and just about everything he's played over the last 20 years. And we get him in a subdued role and we barely get to see him. So I did think that that was detrimental to the movie. But even though it does draw those parallels to A Quiet Place and Nicolas Cage is somewhat absent in the movie, even though he's the top billed star, Arcadian does manage to provide a entertaining movie with very unique creature designs and good characters that give good performances. So with all that being said, Arcadian gets a 3.5 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. I do think that this movie is finished with its short theatrical release. So just stay tuned because I hear that it's coming to Shudder. I heard it's going to be a Shudder exclusive. Which, by the way, Shudder is killing it in exclusives this year. With Late Night and the Devil, now this, and then we got two other movies that seem to be very promising that's coming out this year. They are also going to be Shudder exclusives. Go ahead and support Shudder, guys. Go ahead and get that subscription. It's so affordable. Just go ahead and do it and check this movie out. But now let's move on to the main event, Abigail. When a group of professional criminals kidnaps the daughter of an unknown wealthy man, they retreat to a remote mansion in the woods until the ransom is paid. But once the group discovers the identity of the girl's father, they scramble to escape, only to be abruptly stopped in their tracks by their hostage, who turns out to be a vampire. And this movie was fucking awesome. Unfortunately, most of the plot is given away by the trailers. But don't let that deter you from going. This movie was awesome. And I gotta give kudos to Radio Silence. As far as original projects go, they're now 2-0. They're undefeated. And their two Scream movies are pretty damn good too. I have my problems with them, especially with the last act of Scream 6, but don't even get me started on that. But they've made 4 movies that are very enjoyable and 2 original ideas that were phenomenal. I've enjoyed both of them, and Abigail's no exception. It might be my favorite thing they've done yet. And it all boils down to a lot of things that they do right. One is casting. Melissa Barrera does very well in this as the lead. But it's not just her. The rest of the cast is phenomenal as well. Catherine Newton's in this. Kevin Druid's in this. If you don't know who Kevin Druid is, you would if you've seen his face. And Dan Stevens is phenomenal. Every character in this movie was great. They were all good. And they all had this good camaraderie with one another that just blended together perfectly. And I even like most of their backstories. Their backstories, or the little bit of information that you get from them, it's all somewhat simplistic, but it's very well done. It's particularly Melissa Barrera's backstory. They really make you sympathize with the character, but make no mistake, everyone in this group's a piece of shit. So they do this great job of making you sympathize or root for these, I guess you'd call them anti-heroes, because they're all criminals. Just really good writing on that part. And man, Alicia Ware as Abigail completely steals the show. She is phenomenal. Just chews up the scenery. And the most impressive thing I've seen is how she toggles back and forth from being the little girl who's captured to the monster that is Abigail in real life. She is freaking terrifying at times, and at times she makes you laugh out loud, and at times you're like, this bitch is sick. Like they do a really good job of directing her, and she does a good job of portraying what they want. Just really, really well done. Angus Cloud also plays a character in this movie. Now I'm not gonna sit here and act like I knew who this guy was before this movie started. He looks familiar, but I don't really recall who he is. I had to look him up, and apparently he passed away before this movie started. So rest in peace to that dude, because his character was pretty fun. I really enjoyed his character, and they dedicated the movie to him at the end. And I might have to go back and check out some of his work, but his character was a very fun character. He just added to this great cast in this movie. The bare bones of the story is in the trailer, unfortunately, but that's, again, just the bare bones. There's a lot more to this than what that trailer shows, but they very much so could have concealed a lot more than what they revealed in that trailer, but I'll get to that later. The story in itself is simple, direct, and effective, and that's what we need in movies like this. I like how they take a different spin on vampire lore. What's effective against them? What's not effective against them? How can they defend themselves against this 300-year-old vampire who just so happens to be in the form of a little girl that's also a ballerina? I love the setting of the movie, where it's this old mansion that has all these old like antiques in it, and just has this real gothic feel to it. Really gives you like callbacks to those old classic Universal monsters without just being a complete homage to that. And I seen somewhere where one of the YouTubers that I really enjoy watching said that they got to interview Radio Silence on this and asked them what their inspiration was, and they took stuff from Fright Night and The Lost Boys, and I'm here to tell you that it shows. They definitely poured those inspirations into this movie, and that's probably why I liked it so much. Fright Night in particular is my absolute favorite vampire movie of all time, and probably in my top 10 favorite horror films of all time. And they definitely had a lot of that spirit in this movie, including the comedy aspect of that movie. This movie has some hilarious lines in it that me and the entire audience were laughing out loud. Like there's points in the movie where there's grown ass men running through the house and they're screaming because this freaking ballerina vampire scaring them, and it is terrifying, and I'd probably be doing the same thing. It's pretty fucking hilarious. And the gore in this movie, holy shit. I was not expecting this movie to be as gory as it was. There is some intense gore, and at one point in this movie the entire set is covered in blood. It's like, it's so freaking gory, it's so freaking disgusting. And there is a good amount of practical effects in this movie. I think the only practical, that stuff that wasn't practical, was there are times when in mid like transition from little girl face to like vampire face, it's like it switches and it definitely looks like it's CGI. And there's some scenes where the blood has to be CGI in some scenes, because there's so much fucking blood in this movie. It's insane. It's almost a cartoonish amount of blood, kind of like the old Evil Dead movies. But again, it's hilarious at times, and then it's like it definitely delivers a lot of oh shit moments. I really enjoyed this movie. And really the only thing that I can say that I did not care for in this movie really wasn't even in the movie. I'm actually taking points away in this movie for something that the movie didn't do wrong, but the studio did wrong. The marketing fucked this movie. And when I say it fucked it, this movie could have been like the biggest surprise ever. And no one would have ever known it if the damn marketing wasn't so fucking obvious. Now, don't get me wrong. Like I said, there's more to this story than what you see in the trailer. But the trailer definitely gives you the bare bones of what is going on in this movie. And it's a damn shame, because they could have made this movie, if they had somebody that was creative, like just had one creative bone in their body that could sit down and come up and cut a trailer that is mysterious and still gets the point across where it can get people to come see this movie, then this would have been a fucking humongous surprise. But no, they have to give away a lot of the like surprises in the damn trailer. Just it's not necessarily this studio in particular's fault. It's definitely not the fault of the movie or Radio Silence. It's a problem with all studios. Blumhouse is the worst. They're the worst about revealing the whole fucking movie in their trailer, especially here recently. Don't even get me started on my Blumhouse rant. But despite that horrendous marketing campaign, Abigail gives us one of the best vampire film in years, with its outstanding cast, its good story, its bloody gore, and great practical effects. The boys in Radio Silence deliver once again, and I can't wait to see what else they do in the future. So with all that being said, Abigail gets a 4.5 out of 5 and is definitely grizzly grade guaranteed. Go see this in the theaters, guys. It's not doing very well in the theaters. No one's going out and seeing it, and this movie deserves to be seen. If you are a horror fan, this is a movie that you need to go see. It is fantastic, so go out and see it. And that does it for another episode. Make sure you click the links in the description and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And also follow the YouTube channel so you don't miss any of the content I'm bringing your way. Also, make sure you check out Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. He is a synthwave master, and his music is being used throughout each episode. So check him out on Apple Music, Spotify, and YouTube. Got some personal stuff I need to take care of for a little while. So don't know when the next episode's going to be. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more, and it should be on Civil War and the Fallout show that's on Amazon. As far as the early releases in May, I will hopefully get to those and deliver reviews on those as well. But got something I need to take care of, guys, so I'll be coming back as soon as I possibly can. It shouldn't be too long of a hiatus, only a few weeks. So stay tuned for that, and I appreciate y'all understanding that. In the meantime, there's a lot of stuff that y'all can go check out if you haven't already. Go to my YouTube. I did a Mean Joe Video Rewind episode of the 40th anniversary of Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Mean Joe Rewind is the new segment I come up with where I kind of recut, edit, and re-release episodes of Mean Joe Video that I've done in the past now that I'm up on YouTube. So go check that one out. That's a pretty good tribute to Friday the 13th, the final chapter, my favorite Friday the 13th movie. Also, if you haven't yet, go check out both of the Monster Manual episodes that are up. The one that's on Harry Warden, the miner from My Bloody Valentine, and Goza the Gozerian from Ghostbusters. Check those out. Got a few more episodes that are from the last few weeks on Godzilla X Kong. Got one of the first Omen, Immaculate, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Bunch of movies that I reviewed. If you haven't gotten a chance to check those out, go ahead and check those out. And again, I appreciate all of your support over these last few years of me doing this. Without y'all, this stuff ain't possible. So until next time, remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.